and he moved with all the wisdom and conviction of a man honed by years of bloody service. There would be no catching his blade, not with hands, and not with the Force. The Ronin met Hanrai's strike with the red shock of his own blade. The power behind Hanrai's blow sent him skidding back. The tactician within him wanted to dodge the next thrust, to let the Jedi's own blows carry him astray. But that sort of maneuver only worked when one had no need to worry about who one might leave unguarded. The Ronin would have to keep Hanrai on the opposite end of the bridge. Preferably, he would have the Jedi off the bridge entirely. As the Ronin judged Hanrai, he knew himself judged in turn. They each measured the risk of every lunge, the cost of every hesitation. When the next strike came, it was impossible to say which man moved first, who swung, who countered. More troubling, no matter how he tested Hanrai's defenses and jabs and sparks of white flare and black current, he found no vulnerability to exploit. Hanrai guarded his stance, his grip, his lightsaber. Here was a man who remembered the Sith predilection for tricks. He deftly leapt over the Ronin's attempt to knock him off his feet with a sudden extension of the staff he had built into his auxiliary, and he dodged under the following attempt to run him through with the ignited end. Here also was a man who hadn't missed a day of training since the end of the war. Hanrai's focus never wavered, and through the pulse of his white flare made the Ronin suspect he was enjoying himself. His gaze remained stern. For his own part, he felt sure and sleek, far more so than he had when he faced the bandit or Chie. Perhaps more so than he had since the days before he first brought that cursed Kyber shard into the gullet of these caverns. Days of honing himself with sparring matches and clever games, of eating and sleeping, of allowing himself the creature comfort of camaraderie had done him well. He fought with purpose and belief. In the end, that was his weakness. No more than a minute had passed of this wariness, these blows exchanged and countered. The Ronin had just begun to think there might be an opportunity if he could maneuver the Lord Hanrai just so he might leave the Jedi open to the Traveler's particular gift for precise strikes from a distance. But when he allowed himself a backward glance, he saw his error. The Traveler no longer stood alone at the graveyard end of the bridge. Chia had joined them, though how and from where the Ronin had not the time to wonder. For an instant, Chia's hand hung at the Traveler's elbow like a comfort, keeping them back from a fight they clearly lacked the will to face. Then she stepped to the side, off the ledge, and pulled the Traveler down with her. Both plunged. The Ronin threw out a hand in desperate reflex to temper the terrible physics of their fall down to the lake, and was interrupted by another of Lord Hanrai's wave-strong strikes. This time, their lightsabers ground together. "Leave my itinerant student to Chia," said Hanrai, as if suggesting where they should each sit at a shared meal. "They'll manage each other. I want the measure of you, Sith. Meet me as you are. No distractions." The Ronin bared his teeth. No distractions? What a fool this Jedi was, as all his kind had proved to be. No matter how the fight turned from here, the Ronin would never be able to banish the fear. But he would beg it to make him stronger. At the sight of her companions falling off the stone ledge toward the lake, Akia exclaimed some vile curse. Koru clapped a hand over her mouth and was bitten for her trouble. She growled at the woman, voice low. "If you want them back alive, you'll be quiet." They crouched beside each other in the mural-carved stone chamber the Jedi Lord had left, B-556 hovering just behind them. Opposite their own shelf, on the far side of the cavern, the old man and his fox-masked companion had emerged from a tunnel only to be greeted by the Jedi Lord, the Jedi who had stolen Koru's prey.
"Yes, now's your chance. Strike while he's vulnerable."
Koru shook her head, wanting to dislodge the mounting pressure between her eyes. She heard it clearly every time now, that whispering want that sought to control her. The clouding need that had first murmured to her as she rose in the desolate Genbara temple, the itch
that dogged her like a hunger, a ghost behind her mind. Though what manner of ghost haunted the already dead? Not a ghost. Koru had a name for a power that ensnared the dead and rewove them into weapons, into demons. Witch. But that thought invited more implications than Koru had the power or patience to conceive. As Ikea had flown them into the jungle, Koru had tried to understand what it meant for the witch to be alive. If she was, Koru wasn't. That had not yet impeded her, outside of how her death rendered her vulnerable to the witch's demands. It was too much. The only thing Koru could know and hold as a truth was that the witch wanted her to kill the old man. She thought, I am content with that. If he was the betrayer she thought him to be, and the blade she had stolen from him left her all but certain that he was, then she did want him to bleed, and to be dead, and most preferably by her own hand. But she wanted, vitally, to choose how it was done.
You needn't resist so, Koru. I only want to help.
Koru gritted her teeth. She had conceded to the witch's guidance already, had directed Ikea to a dewy glade on a hill in the midst of the wet mountain jungle, had led the way out of the skiff to a veil of tangled vines draped over the hillside and cut these away with her lightsaber, had found a short, stone-hewn passage waiting on the other side, which opened into a chamber lined with carved murals, which led to a narrow bridge arching over the lake cavern. And there, ahead, she saw her quarry. Her need for the old man's death spiked again within her as she tried to focus on him defending against the Jedi Lord. She wanted ravenously to throw herself at their duel, to seize her revenge while he was distracted. The impulse ran up against unexpected resistance from within, a clear-cut memory of what had happened each time she faced the old man thus far. He fought with the determined cunning of a warrior who cared not at all for the dignity of his name, because he instead cared to win. Koru wouldn't overcome him until she played his game better than he did.
You have the advantage now. Really, Koru, it will go better for you once you let go.
Koru's fist clenched. She railed instinctively against compliance, even as she yearned for what it drove her toward. It was a miserable, tangled way to be, but she clung to it. No matter how deliciously distilled she had been in her obedience to the witch, now she saw submission for what it was, and it soured her soul. She pinched her forehead with ferocity, her nails threatening to puncture her skin. Hey, Ikea tapped her arm lightly, as if daring to prod an unstable chemical. Hey, what's up?
Koru bared her teeth.
Nothing. Looked like something. Ikea raised her hands at the ensuing glare. Whatever, force stuff, I don't care, I just want... Ikea evidently didn't know what she wanted. Her eyes flicked between the arch above and the bridges below, unable to settle. Of the two, she hated the latter more. Down in the cavern, on the golden bridges encircling the lake, pampered socialites swarmed, herded by Jedi. Within that swarm was the one Ikea called Fox, the half-Jedi not-Jedi, whom Kuoru suspected had dealt her that decisive blow in the dockyard on Genbara. Fox had landed on the main platform on the far side of the cavern, from the ledge on which she and Ikea crouched. Their fall from the stone bridge had been slowed and softened. This Koru knew because Fox was not a smattered heap of no longer white robes. Some of that redirection had been the application of Fox's own power. They were nearly all black current. But no small number of the Lord's Jedi retainers had also thrown out their hands to guide their plummet. The way the collected Jedi maneuvered around the edges of the lake cavern spoke to their true intent. Some guided the socialites toward the red shrine gate that led back to the cavern entrance. Others moved in the opposite direction to take positions that blocked any avenues of escape. They wanted Fox cornered, but alive.
What's she doing?
Ikea hissed, gripping a comlink. Her eyes were fixed on Fox as well, and on the old woman facing them. This one, Ikea called Chia. And it was Chia who had given Ikea greatest cause to be upset. She clearly still wanted to trust the old woman, no matter that her eyes told her she could not afford to. Chia, already on her feet, stood across the shrine platform from Fox, who had only just begun to drag himself to their knees. "They're going to fight," said Koru. This was obvious, but Akia needed to hear and accept it, or she would soon become vexing.
"No, why?"
Akia's jaw squared.
"This doesn't make sense."
"No, Wise." Koru grasped the other woman's white-knuckled hand. "No reasons. You decide what you want, and you pursue it. Questions come later, if you still care to ask them." Akia glared, but she didn't ask anything else. "No, why are you still helping me, or why should I listen to you?" She was focused, pragmatic, despite her whining. Koru had instantly liked this about her. It was why she had decided, despite the witch's urging, that she would prefer in the end not to have to kill her. Practical souls did the galaxy good, and Akia was every sort of practical. Instead, Akia said,
"You said alive."
"What?"
"My people, if you want them back alive. You're not here to kill them? Looked like it on Genbara."
Koru opened her mouth to say, "Just one," then shut it, teeth clenched against the witch's push, which drove down on her like a nail into a tree.
"Let go."
"Shut up," Koru snarled. "Not you," she growled at Akio's offended face. At last she ground out, What's victory worth if it's half won by another?" It didn't feel entirely correct, even as she said it, yet it made sense, didn't it? How could she have her revenge without the dignity of taking it herself? The pressure within her sat dangerously askew. To Kuoru's mild disconcertion, Akia nodded, eyeing her with a look that wasn't respect, though neither was it contempt. Understanding? Perish the thought. Koru barely understood what she herself felt or thought, let alone said or did. At least, now there was a goal, something Koru could pursue until her mind righted itself. She looked down again, at the main platform on the opposite side of the cavern, then at the bridge directly ahead. At each point, a pair of opponents squared off. She lacked the power to stop the duel in front of her, and she wouldn't reach the other in time to make a difference unless... Her gaze tracked up to the cavern ceiling above.
"Now you want my help? Well then, it's all I've ever asked for, Koru."
Koru knuckled her forehead but decided to, for the time being, accept that the witch wasn't purely a problem. Directly above the cavern, in the density of the forest above, awaited their scout skiff and the promise that lay within.
"Didn't I tell you they had a purpose? Unleash them. They are yours to command."
Two dead Jedi who had not yet run out of use.
Chapter 17.
It would be fast and sudden, or it would be nothing. So many Jedi in so small a place. "You call this small?" Akia gestured at the cavern, hundreds of meters in length. Would be the death of them. Koru sent Akia away, up to the skiff, and stationed the old man's droid where she needed him, safe in the entry chamber with a good view of a specific section of the lake cavern ceiling. Then, she jumped. She skated, skidding down the cavern wall, pushing and pulling the gravitational streak of her fall with a black current of the Force. When she slammed into the bridge directly beneath her, she came down with the pressure of the white flare, hard enough to rock the repulsor lifts. The socialites upon the bridge scattered to its golden edges, shrieking. They shrieked again when the red flash of Koru's lightsaber bisected the bridge and sent them all tumbling to the lake below. Koru leapt off the debris onto the next floating walkway. There she met a pair of Jedi guardians. They dodged past her toward the slick cavern walls. They would climb and slide down to the lakeside shore to rescue those helpless citizens who had fallen. This was their prerogative, just as it was Koru's to cut down the walkway they threw themselves from as she sprung off it herself. The halved walkway careened in their wake. She would make them as busy as she could.
She met her first knight on the next bridge, a hulking, black-hoofed being. He made himself a wall with his swooping black horns and bristling white mane, emerald blade ignited as a warning. A shame she didn't have time to enjoy him. On the arch overhead, the clash between two old men hungry to die continued, ever more fervent. Before her, on the shrine platform, lay her goal, a frenetic dance between the betrayer and betrayed. Neither fight would wait for Koru to tease this Jedi. The knight charged with his behemoth entirety, a man accustomed to the intimidating weight of himself doing half the work of a duel. Koru slid sideways, flipped over the edge of the railing, and caught herself on the underside of the walkway. Koru had acted more on impulse than plan, and was briefly startled to find she knew exactly what she needed to do. Liquid quick, she ripped open a particular panel beneath the walkway and plunged her hand into the innards to wrench out a precise piece of hardware. She couldn't even name the object as she let it drop. The walkway began to drop with it, no time to question. She propelled upward as the whole thing began to tilt until it floated perpendicular to how it had, and she launched herself toward the next bridge. Her fingers latched onto its foot, and she flipped up onto it. There she stopped, purposefully, no matter that the pressure urged her forward, forward. "Don't do that again," she snarled, hand fisted against her chest. "I won't be puppeted."
"Oh, Koru, it would be so much easier if you just..."
Koru clenched her teeth as if against searing pain. As if to echo her frustration, the cavern shook. Voices cried out in shock and panic. The socialites who had been rescued onto the shore of the dark lake, which was now further darkened. They shrieked in terror because one of the dripping black coils in the water had lurched up onto the beach. A long neck, resplendent with spines and shining black scales, led to a maw lined with needle-sharp teeth, revealed in silver threat as the frilled serpent let out a piercing screech. The cavern shook again. Another serpent roiled in the churn at the opposite end of the lake. It threw itself against the wall as its barbed tail lashed up toward the walkways hovering above it. It was almost as if the serpents were meant to help her, though Koru had no facility for calling living creatures.
"Consider them a gesture of goodwill. I have more than one way to help you, Koru."
Koru's skin still crawled. The witch working through a demon under her control was one thing, but this, manipulating the world outside of... No, she had to focus. The Jedi Knights Koru would have faced next threw themselves past her as they hurtled off the remaining walkways down to the beach or in the opposite direction toward those trapped on the other side of the cavern. They dodged around her, like they thought she would try to stop them. Of course not. She merely needed them out of her way.
"Don't waste my gift. Hurry along."
Koru shook her head clear. Yes, the way was open. No more wasted time. She would deal with the witch later. On the platform by the shrine, Fox danced out of Chia's reach. A part of Koru was infuriated to see it, imagining having to face such a farce of an opponent. At least the old man had seen fit to meet her blade when he dodged and wove. Fox was as yet empty-handed. She couldn't even say if they carried a lightsaber. Chia seemed to share none of Koru's irritation, and for all her opponent tried to escape, she never let them. She was as constant as the current itself, though Koru sensed no particular openness in her to suggest sensitivity to the Force. That brightened Koru's interest. She had always admired those warriors who made themselves deadly without the ability to manipulate current and flare. There was a pattern to the fight, if you could call it that. Chia lunged, Fox slipped away, and Chia said something. Fox faltered, recovered, dodged. With every second, Fox's movements became more rigid, Chia's more fluid, and she never paused even when speaking. Koru heard, "Traitor, lost, fondly," then "gentle soul" and "favored pupil." Every word left Fox more frightened than the last, especially, "He wants you to come home."
"Of course he does, old fool."
"Quiet, you told me to focus," snapped Koru. Chia had backed Fox to the wall by the small shrine. To Kuoru, they looked as though they had been speared. It made her underestimate the ferocity of what came next. Fox drew from their sleeve a hilt, and they slashed forward with a blade. A lightsaber, searingly pale as a white winter sky, and burning like under the flare and the force itself. It blistered through Chia's staff and sent the shorn half flying. Chia leapt back out of reach. Fox didn't move, only stood there, shoulders heaving, saber ignited, and shivering. Its light seemed almost to pulse and sputter. An unstable build, thought Kuoru. A flaw in the crystal or in the wielder. Kuoru had seen the like just days ago when she dismantled the old man's blade. But Fox did have a lightsaber. That answered one question, whether they were a true Jedi, or whether they had been. Chia adjusted her stance as she studied Fox. She neither raised the remaining half of her staff nor advanced, only opened her mouth to speak. She had never been more dangerous. So Kuoru threw her off. An inelegant launch, she would readily admit, but as effective as it needed to be. She swept her hand out as she landed on the final platform, and with a hurtling wave of black current, shoved Chia to the edge and over the brink. Fox sprang to action a second too late. They lunged forward, scrabbling across the platform to catch Chia with some no doubt far more masterful manipulation of the Force. Whatever they managed to do in those first few seconds was interrupted when Kuoru grabbed them by the arm and hauled them upright. Just in time, too. She heard the shriek and echo of B-5's blaster fire overhead, the rumble and crack of rock at last giving way, and the thunderous roar of the scout skiff's engines with Akia at the controls as the cavern ceiling collapsed upon them all. Hanrai could not rightly remember his last experience of honest shock. It was, as such, something of a delight when the cavern ceiling caved in. The totality of the scenario rushed into his awareness as he reflexively broadened himself to become far more than the honed point he had made himself for the duel. His opponent had demanded the fullness of his attention. The Sith was more pure, refined power than Hanrai had allowed him to dream of. Trust his old student to exhume more than he imagined possible. They'd always had a knack for exceeding expectations. But this explosion of rock and schism of stone, this he couldn't blame on them. This he had to pin on the stolen scout skiff, screeching down through the shower of destruction, and on the two figures still on the surface, standing at the edge of the collapse and gazing slack-faced at the aftermath. Hanrai realized with a sharp sorrow that he recognized both of them. These two individuals who had, through ruthless application of black current spiked with white flare, torn the cavern itself apart. Young Jedi Guardians, part of his retinue. Or they had been, before they were killed. The puppets overhead, silhouetted by the sun as they stared down on the damage they had wrought, were no longer Jedi of Hanrai's clan. He could only pray that he would one day recover their bones. After all, they hadn't been moved by their own astounding disregard for what their actions might do to Saikara, to the people within, or to the fragile histories that would be shattered and buried. No, that indifference lay squarely on the power who had already stolen so many of Hanrai's dead. His attention lanced down, past the little astromech withdrawing into the chamber on the far end of the bridge, to the carnage below. There, in the mess of bodies and stone by the lakeside, he identified Chia, fallen but alive. Others, many injured, many grievously. His Jedi had done well to protect those they had, compelled to give up every other pursuit in the name of shielding themselves and the helpless innocents they defended. Some would soon be dead regardless. One of those below was dead already, though this hadn't stopped her. A furious Sith demon with a blaze of white hair. She had caught Hanrai's old student, also alive, thankfully, and was dragging them aboard the waiting scout skiff. The skiff's pilot meant to return for the Sith. Hanrai knew this like he knew sun set. He could not afford to let this one run its course. He had kept himself poised to counter the Sith, even as he stretched his awareness to make sense of the world. The man had proved a shrewd swordsman, driven by chasmic reservoirs of edged feeling. He moved only when he needed to, and then with terrible clarity of purpose. Now he moved not at all, and Hanrai expected the next strike to come would be swift and merciless. He needed to remain on guard. But the blow did not come, and the Sith was a remarkable stillness. Even as the scout skiff streaked up toward the stone arch, he didn't move. His eyes remained fixed on the point above the cavern where Hanrai's attention had first turned, on the two young once-were Jedi who stared back down at him, unblinking, motionless, their deed now done. They were as mirrors, this Sith and those demons, empty and unheeding. How fortunate. Chia had warned him of the man's frailties, had described them to Hanrai in terms of instability and danger. She had not imagined they might present an opportunity. At least, for these precious seconds, Hanrai could have confidence that the man would be unable to interfere. The scout skiff screeched nearer and nearer. Hanrai let his eyes flutter closed. He extended his intent, made contact. He got no further. His student wouldn't allow it. They recoiled from his attempt. Whatever they did next within the skiff forced the entire vessel to shift course and careen up and out of the cavern, abandoning the Sith in their wake. Hanrai let his eyes open and gazed up after the fleeing vessel. It was as he had feared, but also as he expected. To say the least, his student didn't think him an ally. "More is the pity," he said, though the Sith was still too undone by his own fractured mind to respond. Just as well. They would have time to speak soon enough. Chapter 18. They left the Saikara Caverns in a frenzied mechanical shriek. Akia had steeled herself against going back for Chia, who'd just thrown herself and Fox off a bridge. But B-556? Grim? Them she hadn't meant to abandon. Except Fox, dragged into the skiff by Koru, had taken one look out the cockpit window, spied that old Jedi Lord, and lost their idiot mind. Granted, it was creepy as hell how Lord Hanrai had seemed to look straight into the cockpit and right at them. Like he could lock eyes with any being in a vessel moving that quickly amidst all that debris. That didn't excuse Fox throwing a force-based trauma fit to the tune of hurtling the skiff upward and forward at speeds that exceeded any kind of parameter built into the poor thing's framework. They rocketed out of the collapsed cavern. Akia about lost her lunch and the controls. By the time she had full control of the skiff, the only reason she could have had to turn back around would have been to get caught. While she lacked what she would have called full control of her mental faculties, she knew enough not to want that. So off they flew, the scout skiff careening through the jungle, dodging trees and survey droids until it skipped out onto the piercing white-blue of the Deccan Sea. They had pursuit for a while. But Akia knew all about evading Jedi, and Koru did her part to guide Akia, as she had on their journey into the jungle. She sat cross-legged in the co-pilot's seat to Akia's right, eyes closed, brow creased, intermittently offering direction. Soon, all sign of pursuit disappeared from the skiff's sensors. It was just them and the scintillating waters straight on the horizon. In her gut, Akia wanted to turn back. The professional in her bones kept her on track, focused, forward. If only Koru had shared similar instincts. Instead, she started turning over her shoulder to glower at Fox, seated on the floor around where the two dead Jedi had been sprawled. To be fair, it frightened Akia to see them like that. She'd seen Fox be a lot of things, even quiet, but never listless. "Get up," Koru snarled at them. "Lay off," Akia hissed. Koru's lip curled. "Waste your sympathy elsewhere." Her hand stretched out, and for an awful gut wrench of a moment, Akia thought the Sith was going to do something truly evil with it. Instead, Fox shifted a bit, glancing down at their torso. From the folds of their damp white robe, they drew a slender shape which vibrated slightly until it flew out of their grasp and into Kuoru's. Up close, Akia recognized it as something like the hilt of a lightsaber. More beautiful, though. Elegantly bound in thin strips of black-dyed leather and ornamented with shards of bright silvered metal. An heirloom, snorted Kuoru. The kind of lightsaber only wielded by a bloodline heir. No good person carries a blade like this. Fox hadn't grabbed after the stolen hilt. This was weird, Akia realized, because she'd seen how effortlessly they could manipulate the physical world with the Force. Now they just sat there, chin balanced on their fingers as if in thought.
Good people, was it?
They asked.
Are we talking about good people, Miss Bandit?
Kuoru sneered.
Wait, Bandit? Snapped Akia.
Kuoru had the gall to look at her with some kind of patronizing pity, like she was a fool for not knowing. Akia about bit her. Again. For some reason, that made Kuoru look like Akia had bitten her, and like she was genuinely offended by it. She rose, and Akia realized with flaring dread that she'd just seriously pissed off an undead Sith warrior. A Sith warrior who was suddenly still standing, but croaking, chin arched up. Her arm twitched as if she meant to move it, but it remained rigid by her side. Akia stared over her shoulder at Fox, who had not moved, but the direction of their masked gaze remained fixed on Kuoru, who shivered in the hold of some kind of terrifying full-body Force prison. Akia hated it. Fox's head canted toward her. Akia felt her fear and hatred seen, and hated that even more. But in the next second, Fox looked away. Kuoru gasped, and her hand whipped up to her throat.
I'm not saying I don't understand why you got into the business, Miss Bandit, Fox said lightly. Your rebellion had been crushed. Of course you sought Sell for the wound, a means to feel powerful again. And what better way to feel strong than to hunt prey who can't fight back?
Trying to get moral with me, bloodline scum?
Kuoru rasped, winded but undaunted.
Your kind took me from my home. Tried to make me a puppet for your power. I don't know what makes you so afraid of Jedi, but you're just as deluded. If you gave half a damn about my prey, you'd do something other than... whatever this is. Chasing Sith across the Outer Rim and delving into tourist traps.
Akia needed to keep her eye on the controls. This was very difficult to do while terrified the two Force-sensitive wackos on her skiff might at any second come to otherworldly blows. Then, Fox laughed, and it wasn't wholly the laugh Akia knew. It rang far more sharply in her ears. Kuoru grimaced, and Akia feared she would start biting people next.
Please, Akia begged. I am trying to drive, you jerks!
Kuoru rounded on Akia, who now expected she was about to take the brunt of the biting, but something made the Sith demon stop, and it wasn't Fox. Kuoru almost softened. Her mouth opened as if to... who knew what? Who cared? Nope, said Akia. Shut up. I'm getting us to port, and then we're getting the Crow, and then we can figure out what the hell we're doing about... everything! But until then, I don't want to hear another word out of either of you. It was a long, silent trip back. To wit, Akia wanted nothing more than to get back on her ship. The poor Crow was security, freedom, and the comfort of worthwhile tea and an actual bed. If she had the Crow, she could get over the frustrated grief of never having really known Chia, the guilt of abandoning B-556. And whatever the hell it was she felt about Grimm. She would have her relics, all the ghosts kept safe in her hold. She was always better when she had something to take care of. So of course, because the galaxy was nothing if not reliably spiteful, the Crow was no longer in the hangar where Akia had left it. Kuoru was not annoyed. That would have been childish. Fox was merely meditating, their posture wholly tranquil in the center of the scout skiff's floor.
Yet that tranquility was so undeserved that Koru desperately wanted to cut a hole in the hull around their seat to drown them in the oil-slicked sea. They had been left together in the scout skiff at Dezenma's main harbor as Akiya went to secure her ship. The dock worker studiously ignored their vessel, a stroke of luck for which Koru grudgingly had to credit Fox. She certainly wasn't doing anything to facilitate it. Not on purpose, at least. It was possible the witch had once more offered unasked-for assistance. Koru frowned at the thought and rubbed her forehead again. The witch's foreign pressure... She seemed oddly reticent in this moment, as if Fox's presence had somehow made her shy.
"If you think I haven't noticed you, you're quite wrong," said Fox, though their masked face didn't turn in her direction.
"What are you talking about?" said Koru.
"Your friend, Miss Bandit."
"It's not my friend."
Koru surprised herself with her vehemence. Fox's head tilted, and she could almost feel their confusion as if she'd spoken a language they didn't.
"You really don't know what we're after, do you?"
they murmured.
"And I don't care," Koru snapped. This was a lie, but she would rather have cut out her own tongue than let this cretin hold anything else over her.
The moment dissipated as Koru raised her head. Nigh simultaneously, Fox did as well. They both sensed the presence beyond the door. Not a dock worker. Akiya. Upset. Before the skiff's door slid open, Fox spoke.
"If I ever again suspect you intend to strike her,"
they said, light as air,
"I'll put the offending limb somewhere you'd never imagine it would fit."
Koru stared at them as Akiya stepped through the door. Koru was shaken, but not by Fox's threat. She was concerned she might learn to like them. Akiya took precedence. She refused to speak until the door had shut behind her. Then she pointed at both of them in turn, arm sweeping.
"No," she said, though neither had moved.
"Still, no talking. I've heard way more from either of you than I ever want to hear again."
She cursed her way over to the back of the scout skiff toward the planetary navicomputer display. Koru and Fox followed her with their attention. Neither trusted the other enough to move, as if it would have required getting dangerously close to each other. Akiya ignored both of them, calling up a map of Dezenma and zeroing in on the section of the port where she had, presumably, just been.
"Somebody took the crow," she said. "I want it back. I, not we. We don't need my ship, so we can do whatever. Hell, this isn't about me either. It's about what's on that ship that doesn't belong to any of us, least of all the Jedi."
She said the last word like a curse. "What's so valuable that you left it unguarded on a rust bucket like that?" asked Koru. She expected Akiya to round on her with a fury, when all she got was a back still staunchly turned, her mouth tightened.
"Things. Just things," said Akiya, newly old with frustration.
"It doesn't matter. Not to you. But I need them back, and you're going to help me because..."
"I owe you,"
said Fox from the floor. Akiya broke off, pointing at them. She said nothing as she shut her mouth, offering them a gracious chance to not stick their foot in theirs. Fox stood, stretching.
"I imagine it's more than we owe you."
They glanced toward Koru.
"But don't let me speak for you, Miss Bandit."
Koru suppressed the urge to sneer. "I owe you too," she said to Akiya. She did. The woman could easily have ended Koru's hunt by crying for Jedi rescue at the beach before Sekara, and she hadn't. Moreover, she'd provided Koru respite, however unintentionally, space enough to more fully understand that her mind was no longer wholly her own. Koru knew when to recognize the value of other people. She knew when to recognize the trouble of them, too, which was why she said to Fox, "You misbandit me again, and you're the one who'll be finding new ways to affix limbs to their body. I've a name. You'll use it." If nothing else, Koru still had their lightsaber. They were going to have to behave if they ever wanted it back. Akiya exited the scout skiff into reality. It was beautifully grimy and smelled of engine grease. Vermin's reach,
was the seedy part of Jewel Dezenma, as in, not the district where tourists went for the dangerous vibe, where they expected to get pickpocketed for the thrill of it, but the district where tourists got politely escorted back home. The cantankerous tourists who refused to leave, and you'd get those now and again, didn't make it home at all. This particular port within the larger district lived inside a converted warehouse made of haphazard leftover building materials from Dekien's grander projects. It was a nexus through which more illicit pleasures cycled before they found their way to the pretty people in moneyed climes and where people like IKEA came to roost when they had stuff to hide. Most of the ships were nondescript enough, fishing vessels and cargo tugs, and their stolen scout skiff fit right in, aside from the fact that its cannon was more obvious than was typical. The people looked refreshingly real, too. Every species IKEA recognized, and some she didn't, wearing clothes they lived in and talking about real things, like whether it was lunch yet and where they hoped to find it. The auntie who ran the dockyard was an old hut, who was as much muscle as fat, and who wore her bulk with the grace of experience. She was talking to a skinny young man in front of her office. When the manager raised her head to squint at IKEA's approach, the man turned too. He scratched the back of his head, bowed thanks to the auntie, and sauntered over to IKEA with a lackadaisical grin.
"Kia, long time no see. Still chasing pipe dreams, huh?"
She plucked at his trim beard. "Wasn't I doing that before? I need clothes, Shogo, and info." Something in her tone gave her away. Shogo led her off with a hand on her shoulder, his grin just a hair too wide to be sincere. They went together down the pier to the low-slung houseboat Shogo operated out of. On one hand, she didn't love leaving her scout skiff so far behind. On the other, what was she going to do if a bloodthirsty ex-Sith, ex as in dead, and an emotionally volatile ex-Jedi, ex as in what was even going on over there, went for each other's throats? Yell about it? Right, sure. She was better off hoping they exhausted each other. Shogo's slicing setup hadn't changed much since IKEA last saw it. But then, he'd always preferred running clean. A few data pads and other such lay stacked on a counter alongside the unobtrusive gear he'd strapped on for outdoor work. He took advantage of all that, plus his unremarkable face, to get in, get out, and get the job done. IKEA had met more ambitious slicers, sure, but they were the ones that went big and got caught. Shogo worked on the same job for years at a stretch in 100 quiet ways until a planet-wide banking system fell, or a Jedi fleet went dark, or some other wild bit of hell. He had no business calling her new crew any kind of dreamers. Maybe. Sort of. "It's the crow," she said as he handed her new clothes. "It's gone." He winced, as if he'd suspected as much, and went to haul out a communications deck while she changed. She didn't bother finding a back room to pull it all on. Trousers, kimono, and a work vest, all clean but stained with the strain of actual labor. She and Shogo had seen too much of each other bleeding out over the years to care much about things like being naked. And right now, she needed the familiarity. Shogo gossiped while he worked, catching her up on the rest of their old trooper crew. Sae and Haba were off in the outer rim helping to set up an independent comm network, and they were in bed together again, but that wouldn't last any longer than it ever did. Kabeji was off in the middle of the core, working on wiping those exploitative loans off the map by way of disappearing this or that banker. She'd sent Shogo some fantastic rice candy if IKEA wanted to try some. They were in the corner over there. He hadn't heard from Unsuke in months, but that was how it went. And soon enough, the guy would turn up with a new lead on Sith auxiliaries or some other bounty to dump on Shogo's lap for want of a buyer. Then Shogo winced even more acutely, eyes on his deck.
"Hell, Kia, don't tell me those relics were on the crow,"
she asked too tightly. "Where else do you think I'd be keeping them, Sho?" He showed her the report. Requisitions. Imperial. IKEA sat down on the floor of his little houseboat and thought at first that she'd have to try very hard not to scream. Instead, she felt empty. It couldn't be the haze of shock.
She'd expected this, after all, even as she'd hoped that it was some other unforeseen complication that had whisked the crow away. So why did seeing for certain just who had taken her ship made her feel so empty? Shogo sighed and let himself slowly down onto the floor as well. His knee still bothered him. It had never been the same after their commander had shattered it, that first awful mission away from home. By the time the rest of them had been able to afford a transplant, he'd been too nervous about proprietary parts to want anyone else's tech in his body. His brace was his own bespoke creation. That was why she'd commissioned him for a new prosthetic when they were still on their way. She could see the thing waiting for her on his work table. Sleek and durable, homemade, perfect for a certain dour jawline, assuming Grimm wasn't dead by the time she got it to him. Akia groaned into her palms. You doing your exercises? Still can't think about yourself, huh? Shogo handed her the bag of fancy rice candy. Akia took one out because it was expected of her, but she couldn't bring herself to fiddle with a bright-colored wrapper. Shogo had the awkward look of a man who didn't know what to do with someone else's feelings. Frankly, Akia didn't either, so she couldn't fault him for how long it took him to speak again. You're not gonna want to hear this, he said, but you have to. This mission of yours, Reizu, the relics, that mystic, whatever you were doing here with that big guy you picked up on Genbara, it's a lost cause. It was lost even before those imps took the crow. You get that, right? He leaned in, searching for something in her face. Come on, Kia. You're the one who always kept us fed, watered. Everything we needed to be alive first so we could dream later. What is it about this that you can't let go of? How do I bring you back? Akia had a dozen different ways to finish that argument for him. Words about making home and finding peace where you ended up, not in far-gone fantasies. Or helping the people in front of you, not the ghosts you'd already lost. So why couldn't she get any of that out of her mouth? I don't know, she said dully. Can't justify it. Just got under my skin. Maybe it was Fox who had made her want Reizu in the first place. But any faith she'd been storing in them had crumbled at the same time they fell apart in Seikara. Akia hated to think of how quickly Fox had turned their power on Koru. No matter that Koru was a bandit or a Sith or whatever, it didn't sit right with her. So it wasn't Fox who made Akia want Reizu now. Because she did still want it. Akia flopped backward to lie flat on the floor. What else am I going to do? She asked the unlit ceiling. I can't just let it go. Not if there's a chance. The Sith Witch's demons weren't the only restless lost. The ghosts nestled in the lanterns and mirrors and other lovely relics within which those kyber shards were embedded. They needed Reizu. Needed home. If Akia could get it back for them, for the dead, and for the living who'd entrusted them to her, then that made all the horrid and the hurt and the heartbreak worth it. She'd fight to reclaim Reizu until it killed her, because Reizu mattered to someone, even if it didn't always matter to her. Shogo nudged her boot with his own and sighed. Something needs to be yours, Kia. Guess it might as well be this. He tossed her a data card. That'll get you through the front gate of the High Lord shipyard. You're going to want to get to the crow before they ship it out of Atmo. Everything after that is up to you. Akia held the card up in thanks. It was all she could ask of Shogo. For the rest, she'd have to trust Fox. And she did. Mostly, she was just starting to worry that trust would kill her first.
Chapter 19.
The hangars of Dezenma soared skyward in varnished and lacquered pagodas. Multicolored banners hung from the lip of their roofs in stately array. Every craft ascended and descended in strict tapestry coordinated by Dekien's exacting municipal flight directors. On landing, the poor crow had been relegated to the low-tiered, humble hangars on the fringe of Vermin's Reach. Now it waited for them at the topmost tower of an egregiously palatial monstrosity. Koru couldn't hide her distaste.
Akia elbowed her side. Make that face in front of a Jedi and they'll cut it off. Not if I cut theirs off first, Koru muttered. But that would be obvious, and they had just been thoroughly lectured on how much they needed subtlety. Mid-lecture, Koru had treated Fox to her most dismissive glare. Won't your mask stick out? She asked.
Oh, don't you worry about me, they said. I'm much better at this than you are.
Irritatingly, they were. When Fox sauntered through the ornate wooden gates to the High Lord's hangars, not a soul glanced their way. As Koru and Akia nipped at their heels, no one paid them much mind either. They drew quizzical looks at first, but in moments this attention inevitably strayed elsewhere. Even as they crossed the rolling stone courtyard that separated the main gate from the first tier of hangars, no one looked. They passed more checkpoints, obvious and otherwise. Neither stern-faced guards in dark uniform, nor beautiful attendants in sweeping patterned kimono, nor even Jedi, who walked the premises in watchful pairs, looked at them for more than a handful of seconds. Each and every one was steadfastly inattentive to the three infiltrators. It galled. This was no show of imperial incompetence. It was a single master flaunting their control. Fox strolled unheeded into the heart of Jedi power and never flinched. Once they reached the hangar, Fox ushered them to a guest lift carved entirely of fragrant wood and shooed away the wealthily clad couple who tried to join them. Only once they had keyed in the desired floor did they turn to their companions.
You'd be doing me a tremendous favor if you relaxed.
I'll keep that in mind, said Akia, arms crossed. Her eyes remained fixed on the courtyard vanishing below, visible through the latticework of the lift walls. Fox turned to Koru. Koru bared her teeth.
I'm relaxed. I'm aware. Could you rein it in, even a little?
Koru bristled. She wouldn't ask what they meant. That much was obvious. Where Fox slid through the world as if they themselves were a whorl of the black current, manipulating minds as proficiently as they manipulated land speeders, Koru seared through, a never-doused core of white flare. She threatened Fox's work simply by existing in proximity to it. Frankly, she liked to know she could disrupt such a skilled master with so little effort. In any case, the time for subtlety would soon pass. Koru carried two lightsabers now, the one she had taken from the old man, the other from Fox. Once they reached the tier where the poor crow had been docked...
Don't be an idiot. Play along.
Koru scowled and turned away. She yearned to snap at the witch, but the idea of doing so in Fox's presence... It struck her as foolish, perhaps even dangerous. Their attention remained trained on her, as did their expectation. She prickled under it, but she couldn't give them what they wanted. She didn't know how.
Your education was tragically stunted. Here, then.
Koru frowned more deeply. She flexed her hands, open and closed, and with each flex felt an unusual palpability to what she could only call herself. It was as if she had all at once become aware of another dimension to her being. When she clenched her palm, her light folded in on itself, no longer fractured and diffuse, but collected and intense. Fox leaned ever so slightly forward, seemingly astonished.
Well, you could have done that sooner.
Koru knew she couldn't have, not without the witch's assistance, no matter that she didn't want it. Worse, Fox continued to watch her as the lift rose, as if they doubted she'd done it, or that she'd done it on her own. She hadn't, and she hated that. But more than that, she hated Fox. That was far easier in any case than hating something she couldn't even punch. Aren't you supposed to be concentrating? She bit out. Fox clasped their hands behind their back and turned benevolently forward. Koru wanted dearly to kick them off at the next tier. Akia muttered a half-hearted scold. The three of them spent the rest of the ride in congealing silence. Koru realized that she needed these people to be, if not happy, then content with her presence. Without them, she would be hard-pressed to reach the old man with any alacrity. If she had to trouble herself with rescuing Akia's ship and cargo first, so be it. She even treasured the act as one she performed more for her own need than for... She pushed the thought aside. Suffice to say that she lacked the hubris to imagine she was, at present, better off alone. Even so, she was beginning to wonder whether trusting Fox was possible, let alone worth it. They radiated threat. If they could smudge interest from a mind as soon as they looked at the being the mind belonged to, who knew what they could do with sustained focus? Case in point, as they exited the lift, Fox strode forward, buoyed by perfect confidence in their own ability. Akia kept close, and Koru trailed after, grimacing at every face who turned toward them, then away. Dozens of faces. The topmost tier of the Grand Pagoda housed the poor crow, the central attraction surrounded by technicians, and a full half-squadron of fighters. More crew tended these vessels, droids and mechanics, and the suited-up Jedi who would pilot each ship. Akia's freighter would leave with an escort. As they reached the ramp leading up to the crow, a Jedi coming down it stopped short and glanced a second longer at Fox than anyone had before. He was a knight, human, tidily put together and weathered by experience, and as the seconds drew on, he frowned. Fox clucked their tongue, made a shooing motion with their hand, and the Jedi shook his head. He proceeded off into the hangar with sharp purpose in his stride. "Creepy," said Akia. "Very," said Koru. "An old friend," said Fox, with a dismissive tone that suggested they considered friends as engaging as common lint. "Don't dawdle." Akia and Koru exchanged a look. Akia's meant concern, and Koru's did too, after a fashion. Akia cared about Fox, and probably to an extent about the Jedi. Koru cared that, as far as she could tell, Fox was the least trustworthy variety of Jedi she knew. Koru understood her distaste for the black current came in some part from its resistance to her control. She also understood that every time she saw it slide through a being's brain and reroute their intent, her teeth chilled, as if against ice. The thought of such control turned on her, it sickened. She'd rather be a truly dead thing. No, she'd rather kill what dared touch her that way. She had a memory, one she rarely allowed herself to recollect. She had been young, freshly taken by the Jedi, and always agitated, crying or screaming or fighting. A master had often come to her then, grasped her hands in theirs, and lulled her into quiescence. She remembered neither their name nor their face, only the murmur and the subtle pulse of the black current as she was submerged within it. Only once she had been rescued by the Sith had she at last been allowed to scream. Koru touched the back of her head, brow creased. She expected a wait, a voice. She was met with silence. Beside her, Akia's discomfort lost to her urgency. Once on the crow, she pushed her way in front of Fox, even as Koru said, "Now what?" Fox gestured Koru's hand away from the lightsaber hilt she had grasped.
"We get what we came for."
Did that not mean the ship? Koru frowned as they passed one, two, three crew members still on the freighter, a pair of technicians by the engine room, a Jedi guardian in the galley hall. Akia dismissed all this on the way to the cargo hold in the belly of the ship. The doors hung open. They could see this from the ladder they dropped down into the loading zone. The first one down, Akia slowed as she approached, though Koru couldn't immediately make sense of why. The hold was strikingly empty. Akia couldn't speak. Koru saw devastation in her stillness, anger in the cut of her shoulders. Koru rapidly realized that the problem lay in what the crow no longer held. Fox dared to touch Akia, a hand to her arm, and the woman was too furious to shrug them off. "They'll have taken it all to Hanrai's Imperial Dreadnought, classified the lot as recovered valuables, I expect, now bound for a museum, or stowed to be returned as gifts to show people who they belong to." Akia cursed and covered her mouth. "I know. I know. I hate them."
"We'll get them back," said Fox.
"Oh? From a Jedi Lord's Imperial Dreadnought?"
"As luck would have it, the crow is already headed there. We only need allow ourselves to go with it."
Koru scoffed. "Really?
we're just going to sail into the belly of that beast?
Would you rather be flicked out of the sky like an inconvenient insect? Fox asked. Or are you perhaps hiding some other special Sith talent?
Koru glowered. Fox tilted their head. Akia groaned and pushed one hand into either of their faces. For the love of everything, just get us there. They hid in plain sight. Akia skulked neurotically in the cargo hold, and Fox stood idle guard by the ladder that led to it while the Crow was in flight. Koru took herself to the gunner pit in the Crow's left wing. She imagined any more time spent having to be stared at by Fox would end in her attempting to remove their mask and then their eyes. This allowed Koru to watch as the poor Crow departed the Grand Pagoda in the escort of 6 fighters. The Deccan air traffic conductors sent them in time with another squadron on the opposite side of Dazenma, and they looped past each other as they sailed out of the atmosphere. Koru imagined for her own amusement the ships all crashing into each other and raining fire down upon Dazenma's pleasure quarters. No such luck. The Crow and its Jedi escort danced out into the black, leaving behind one perfectly unmarred temple to Imperial decadence, only to head toward another. Someone had dared to call the dreadnought the Reverent, and it ate up a devastating slash of sky. All white expanse flourished with gold and green. Red pillars accented its command deck, an allusion to the Imperial seat the immense vessel represented. Guilt and grandeur, an empire that thought itself untouchably vast. Indeed, Koru's eyes couldn't capture the Reverent's entirety. It hollowed her gut to think she might never truly wound the giant. How could she? Her nails, clutched around her wrist, dug minute crescents into her flesh.
You're expanding. Dim yourself.
I know what I'm doing, Koru growled and clenched her fists, eyes shut tight. The cuts in her wrist throbbed as she drew the white flare back into herself. Control. More control. She breathed in through her mouth, out through her nose, and opened her eyes to fix on the reality before her, which she could reasonably grasp and therefore contain. The Crow had shifted course in the time since she closed her eyes. She saw neither Deccan nor the Reverent. Fine, she liked seeing neither. Instead, she only had to behold the hungry black and winking glimmer of space and space and space. Koru's gut reflexively twisted. Yet as she breathed again, she felt nothing. No terror, no rage, no shameful panic. Only the black and her body, an intensity of white force condensed into her soul self. She was alive, or something close to it. She was not afraid. Really? Koru knit her brow and, hands open on her knees, searched the newly realized dimension of herself for a trace of that old instinct. She knew she hated space, the enormity of it, the loneliness and threat. Yet that fear seemed somehow beyond her. Locked in a box she could just barely imagine, yet couldn't seem to find.
What good has fear ever done you? I told you, didn't I? Let go.
Koru rubbed the back of her neck hard, as if that would help. She needed to be elsewhere, with people. The witch grew reticent around them, and Koru desired that very much, even if it meant facing more of Akia's upset or Fox's insipid jibes. She clambered up out of the gunner pit, only to find a person in the corridor. Not one of the crew they were meant to be hiding from, which was good, just Fox, which was distasteful, to say the least. Fox didn't so much as offer Koru a hand as she hauled herself up the ladder. Not that she would have accepted it if they had. But the way they stared at her, and she could tell they were staring, even with that idiot mask, made her feel like the subject of study, examined under a lens.
You seem distracted, said Fox.
Only because you keep being distracted by me, she snapped.
You're rather insistently distracting.
Fox looked down for a moment. In this narrow corridor of light freighter, they had nothing of interest to see but their sandals.
I don't suppose you asked for this.
Koru, who had been flirting with the idea of tipping Fox into the gunner pit, froze.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you know, resurrection, being leashed to the witch and all.
Koru flinched back and hated herself for it.
She knew. But admitting it, hearing it, acknowledging the witch was too much, too dangerous, too...
It's only, well, in my experience, her demons haven't generally been so self-possessed.
There it was. The dreadful thought she had not allowed herself to have. Koru had seen the witch raise her demons before, during that final great muster when the Sith took Reizu. They didn't last. They weren't meant to. And they had never been much more than shades coalesced into purity of purpose. What, then, was Koru? She didn't dare ask for fear of what she might lose if she did. Let go, she heard, not as a murmur, but worse, as a memory. Let go. Let go. Shut up, Koru snarled, hand braced at the back of her neck. Fox stiffened, withdrawing a hair's breadth. Koru relished their wariness, this precipitate to fear, though she couldn't say whether she meant the snarl for them or for the thing welling inside her. Fox was afraid, and Koru liked it as much as she hated it, because if they were to be fearful, Koru wanted them quailing from her, and she didn't want to be shivering herself. Koru lurched forward, Fox stepped back. The sound of approaching footsteps brought them both up short. A Jedi rounded the corner of the corridor. The knight whose friendship Fox had dismissed in the hangar not an hour before. Fox and Koru drew instinctively apart. Fox had brushed off the suggestion that knocking elbows with the crew would endanger their control, but Koru doubted it would help. The knight slowed as he neared, angled himself to walk between them, and slowed further. Brow knit, his gaze drifted sideways toward Fox. Wait! Fox backed up, another step, restive. The Jedi's attention remained trained on them. Koru waited a cold second for Fox to do something, anything, to upend the Jedi's brain with a black current, or to push him into the gunner pit. But they didn't move. So Koru threw a punch, sharp and direct, into the Jedi's jaw. He dropped like a stone. Fox lunged forward to catch the Jedi. They didn't manage to grab him before he knocked his head on the edge of the gunner pit, though they did stop him from toppling headfirst down the shaft. When they looked up, cradling the sagging body, Koru stood over them.
Wonderful, Fox intoned. You're lucky you didn't kill him.
I wasn't trying to. Koru nodded at the pit. Reluctantly, Fox let her help them lower the Jedi down into it, until he had been settled limply in the gunner seat. They closed the pit hatch after him, and Koru welded the hatch shut with a flaring tip of the old man's lightsaber. When Fox frowned, she stabbed through the hatch to make a single hot, glowing hole. There, she said. Now it's ventilated. Fox shook their head as if annoyed, but when they spoke, it was evident they were more annoyed with himself.
I've been unfair to you. Expressed some of my own frustrations as if they were your fault.
Koru scowled to hide her confusion. Don't think an apology gives you the moral high ground.
As if you care anything about...
Fox inhaled, stood, and fixed their hair.
What's happened to you? It's profound. And as you might have guessed, I have some familiarity with the phenomenon.
Are you offering me help, Jedi? They didn't like to be called that. Their glower peeked from behind their mask.
If you would humble yourself to accept it?
A scoff rose in Koru's throat, and she caught it there. Something else pulsed within her, under her skin. She was infested. She almost wished she could forget she knew that she was. The thought sickened her like weak old meat.
If you fear their intentions, you shouldn't, said the witch. They don't hate you.
Koru stared over her shoulder. The crow hummed around her, Fox breathed in front of her, and cooling metal popped below. Don't do that again, she said to the witch, a threat. It brought her no comfort to realize that, in the case of future transgressions, she knew not where to direct retaliation. You do hear her, then? Clearly, I mean.
Koru couldn't bring herself to look right at Fox. No matter that the witch held her tongue, the longer Koru was aware of the weight of her attention, the heavier it grew. Like a pebble held until it became an anchor.
She's the reason we're cavorting around these tourist traps, you know, said Fox. We'd very much like to find her, so on one hand, I encourage you to consider joining us to ask her a few pertinent questions.
Koru scowled because she didn't know what else to do. She wished Fox silent. They were as insensitive to others' desires as usual.
On the other hand, you ought to know that our conversation is unlikely to be the friendly sort. Either way,
they bowed their head in thought.
I certainly don't blame you for your grudge against our large, brooding friend, but I encourage you to consider who you might be outside his influence. I don't mean who you are unto yourself. That's no sort of question for a dead woman to ask if she wants to be more than dead. Just tell me, Koru, for your own sake, what exactly do you think you're doing? Who is it you're trying to be? And who for?
Who are you? She spat back, knowing herself petulant. To her surprise, Fox pondered the retort.
I can tell you who I think I am, who I'd like to be. Someone who corrects their mistakes, who ensures the world won't suffer overmuch for what they've already done wrong.
Then, smilingly,
now you.
That's none of your concern.
I rather think it is, given how intent you are on gutting my companions.
Just one of them. And you? Koru snapped, then she fell silent. To her own incredulity, she found herself honestly ruminating. She had no immediate answer to offer, but she wanted one. Irritatingly, Fox nodded, thoughtful.
Well, think on it, why don't you? I suspect that at the very least it will be more satisfying to murder someone because you wanted to, rather than because someone told you it was a good idea.
Koru eyed them suspiciously. You're the worst Jedi I've ever met. They put a gracious hand to their chest, taking it for the compliment it was.
Chapter 20.
The Ronin knew it was impossible, yet he couldn't banish the cloying scent of autumn from his nose. Space smelled nothing of autumn. It was monumental absence, an obliterating thing. He often wished he could find solace in it, but he was inevitably distracted by whatever mechanism had ferried him into the dark. This time, a Jedi dreadnought called Reverent, a palace in the shape of a knife, regally white and flecked with gold. He couldn't help but admire the pristine intricacies of its interior workings, though he knew all too well the cost of maintaining a vessel of such devastating size. It took people. It took planets. Lives and homes reshaped in service to Empire. The Reverend's trappings were no less impressive. The Ronin's knees pressed into a woven mat, and he faced a sliding lattice door. Outside, he heard voices shouting not with panic, but exercise, as well as, if he was not mistaken, running water. Most strangely, that incorrigible scent, osmanthus, interwoven with other vegetal fragrances. The lord of this ship was an excessive sort. Also, a cautious one, though it might not have seemed so to the casual observer. The Ronin had been left conscious and unbound, and he had been permitted the dignity of retaining both weapons, though they had taken his pouch of kyber. It seemed a contradiction for the Jedi to allow him the transgression of his lightsaber, especially as it was the more dangerous of his possessions. They had also left him his wrist cuff, though it was dark and had remained so.